The video you are about to watch was recorded live in Lebanon, Tennessee on Saturday, June 27th. A couple of quick announcements before I play the video. On Wednesday, July 15th, I will be teaming up again with Gabriel and Urban from Escape the Technocracy to offer a 3-hour live webinar on how to use AI in a privacy-centric way to boost your productivity. Visit ett.live for more details or to register. Also, my Brushfires of Freedom tour kicks off on Thursday, July 16th. These are a series of 19 free public speaking events across 16 states. Visit brushfirestour.com for details. And finally, if you would like to support my work making these videos and advocating for privacy, I invite you to buy me a coffee or join my Patreon. Now, on to the video. Welcome. Thank you for coming out to this presentation. We got a minor technical difficulty today. I brought my clicker to run the presentation, but I didn't have the plug-in that plugs into the computer to make it work. So we're going to go old school, and I'm just going to kind of nod over here. But my name is John Padfield. I have a YouTube channel called Business Reform, where I talk about issues at the intersection of business, technology, and society. And one of the issues at the intersection of business, technology, and society is surveillance. I used to say that there were two threats to our personal privacy: government surveillance and surveillance capitalism. And what we have seen over time is those two have pretty much merged. I don't know about Tennessee, but where I live in Indiana, the Indiana Bureau of Motor Vehicles sells license plate data to data brokers. The state of Indiana takes in about $17 million a year selling my name, license plate number, vehicle description, and a few other pieces of information to data brokers. And those data brokers have to sign a contract saying you're allowed to use the data for this, you're not allowed to use the data for this. So far, 200 data brokers have been temporarily banned from buying license plate data in Indiana for violating the terms of service. My first question, if 200 data brokers have been banned, how many are you selling to? Does that represent 95% of them, or does that represent 5% of them? I don't know. But here's what gets me the most. As a driver in Indiana, I do not have the ability to opt out of having my data sold. And when it came out that 200 data brokers have been banned from purchasing this data from the state of Indiana, somebody went to the Bureau of Motor Vehicles and said, I would like a list of the 200 companies that have purchased data and abused it. They're on the naughty list. And the Bureau of Motor Vehicles said, no, 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 we can't let you have that. That would violate their privacy. I couldn't make that up if I tried. So anyway, that's me. Business Reform on YouTube. Got about 250,000 subscribers and growing. This is what I call the Brushfires of Freedom Tour. I've been traveling the country. I have spoken across about 17 or 18 states now, from Florida all the way out to Utah. This summer, I'm going out on a 19-city, 16-state tour across the West. My goal is to talk about these issues in all 50 states, and I'm well on the way. I'm about a third of the way there. I took the name Brushfires of Freedom Tour from an old quote. The quote is, it doesn't take a majority to prevail, just an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting brushfires of freedom in the minds of men. That quote is misattributed to Samuel Adams. I don't know who actually said it. It just kind of appeared. But there's no evidence of Samuel Adams saying it, although it's certainly consistent with Samuel Adams. In talking about founding fathers, Benjamin Franklin, he had a wealth of wisdom. Benjamin Franklin said this, those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. He said that over 200 years ago. What I find interesting, this quote has been shared on Facebook related to flock cameras. And there are people who have mocked Benjamin Franklin. That's quaint. This is 2026. There are certain fundamental principles that don't change. We're in a church. There are some things that we believe that have been around longer than the 1950s. They predate 1900. They go back thousands of years. We still believe them because truth doesn't change. And I believe this is truth, but there are people that want to mock that truth because it's 2026. But Benjamin Franklin shared one other quote that I'm going to get to in just a second. I want to give you the context of this quote. Benjamin Franklin is one of only six founders who signed both the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution. 11 years after the Declaration of Independence was signed, delegates from 12 states met at in Philadelphia, Liberty Hall. They met to debate what should the Constitution look like. It lasted for 4 months. And early in those debates, there were so many clashes about what rights should be retained by the states, what rights should be overseen by the federal government. So many different opinions. And there were some very harsh arguments. And as they were making so little progress, Benjamin Franklin observed, "We just came through a revolution. And during the revolution, we were constantly on our knees asking for divine guidance." And as the Constitutional Convention was bogging down, it was Benjamin Franklin, who is now well into his 70s. He was 70 when he signed the Declaration of Independence. He's about 81 during the Constitutional Convention. Benjamin Franklin said this, "I have lived, sir, a long time. And the longer I live, the more convincing proofs I see of this truth, that God governs in the affairs of men. If a sparrow cannot fall to the ground without his notice, is it probable an empire can rise without his aid?" And he called on the Constitutional Convention, "Let's start every day in prayer." And in the spirit of Benjamin Franklin, I want to start this meeting in prayer. I'm going to ask Pastor Jim to come up, lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, and then to open us in an invocation.
Please join me in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Heavenly Father, we thank you for this time together, and we thank you for the grace that allows us to have this time at all. God, I ask that you create an environment, God, that is receptive. God, I ask that you give us the wisdom to understand that which is being conveyed to us, so that through that wisdom we might have revelation of what our position should be. Some people in this room, Lord, are set, and some are not. God, regardless, cause us to see the truth, whatever that truth may be, and walk in it. God, I pray for our speaker today. I ask that you give him wisdom, that you give him a ready revelation of his material. Lord God, we just thank you again for who you are, God, and what you've placed within us. God, your word says that Christ Jesus set us free. And God, that we must stand on the walls of that freedom. God, we praise you that we have the strength to. We ask that you give us continued strength. God, if this is a fight, we should fight to fight it. We praise you, Lord. We thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. I want to quickly and briefly dispel one common misconception. There are people, when we start discussing surveillance, particularly when it comes to public safety related surveillance, who believe there are only two positions. You either embrace total surveillance, you have no right to leave your house without being recorded, or you hate cops. And I don't believe that. I am not anti-law enforcement. When I ran for office, I'm a former state representative. When I ran for office, I was very proud to have the endorsement of the Fraternal Order of Police. They said when I was running for re-election, your support and commitment to Indiana law enforcement has not gone unnoticed. I was very happy to have their support. More recently, I did consulting work for the Marion County Sheriff's Department. They had some internal process issues, and I have a lot of expertise in process improvement. Did it in industry for 20 years. And so I was hired by the Marion County Sheriff's Department to help them revise some procedures that they had that led to inmates accidentally being released from jail. So I just want to get that out of the way. What I'm talking about today is not anti-law enforcement. What it is pro-Constitution and pro-original intent. As a legislator, I took an oath to uphold both the Indiana and the U.S. Constitutions. I take that oath seriously. And I spent a lot of time reading the Constitution. So I want to move on and talk about a very important document. I'm not focusing on the Constitution at first. I want to focus on a different document. Next Saturday, we as a country will be celebrating the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. And I want to briefly touch on that document. We have five men, if you could go back one please. In June of 1776, five men were appointed to write the Declaration of Independence. They are portrayed, or they are represented in the painting, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, Robert Livingston, Roger Sherman, and John Adams. Those five men were tasked with writing the Declaration of Independence. The sentiment was already there, we want to break away from Great Britain. We need a document declaring this, and they were tasked with writing it. Thomas Jefferson, historians say, wrote about 80% of the Declaration of Independence, but he did have input from the other men. And in this famous painting, he is presenting the Declaration of Independence to John Hancock, who was the president of the Continental Congress. John Hancock then was the first signer of the Declaration of Independence, and he famously signed his name very large, and 55 other men signed this document, which ends with the statement, "We pledge our lives, fortunes, and sacred honor." This was basically a declaration of war. They're telling Great Britain, the most powerful military in the world, we are no longer subject to your jurisdiction. And when they signed it, this is immediately going to be read as treason by the king. This immediately prompted the war. And so when they signed this, probably every one of those men realized they're signing their own death certificate. They are wanted men as soon as they sign this document. This is the opening paragraph of the Declaration of Independence. And I'm not going to read the entire thing, but I want to draw attention to the part in yellow. In the opening paragraph, they're stating, "We feel compelled to tell the world why we are declaring our independence." But notice who they appeal to. The laws of nature and of nature's God. They're not addressing this part to the king. They're going to the higher authority, calling on the laws of nature and of nature's God. I want to go over the preamble. And most people know at least the first part of the preamble. But the preamble is about a paragraph long, and I want to go through the whole preamble. It begins with, "We hold these truths to be self-evident." Now, while Thomas Jefferson wrote about 80% of the Declaration, Dr. Benjamin Franklin contributed the concept of self-evident. Self-evident means it is so obvious, I don't have to explain it any further. Self-evident comes from mathematics. If A equals B, then B equals A. That is self-evident. And that was the term that Franklin suggested that they used to describe the truth. We hold these truths to be self-evident. This is obvious. And so we're going to take a look one by one at the truths that were declared by the 56 men who pledged their lives, fortune, and sacred honor. That all men are created equal. Intellectual honesty compels me to acknowledge one thing. The 56 signers, some of them had slaves. Their failure to live up to a principle does not negate the principle. All men are created equal. That those men are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Today we would use the word inalienable, means the same thing. But again, they are saying our rights don't come from government. We are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Unalienable means unable to be separated. No one can take my rights. They may violate my rights, but they can't take my rights. My rights were given to me by God. No man can take them, but a man can violate them. That among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That is not an all-inclusive list. They are saying, for instance, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness are three of the unalienable rights given to us by our Creator. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. Let that sink in. What is the purpose of government? To secure these rights. Remember when I said no one can take our rights, but they can violate them? Without government, it's the strongest rule, the most ruthless rule, the best armed rule. We need government to secure our rights. That is the purpose of government. To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. And Patrick Henry had a few things to chime in on this during the debate about the U.S. Constitution. Patrick Henry said during the debate on the Constitution, "You are not to inquire how your trade may be increased or how you are to become a great and powerful people, but how your liberties can be secured. For liberty ought to be the direct end of your government." This wasn't just a couple of people that believed this. This was the original intent of the founders. Government is there to protect our rights. Patrick Henry went on the next day. "Guard with jealous attention the public liberty. Suspect everyone who approaches that jewel." Imagine you're at home at night and you hear somebody trying to open the back door. Do you just roll over and go back to sleep? It'll be fine. No, suspect anyone that approaches that jewel. Patrick Henry saying, if it looks like someone is approaching the public liberty, be on guard. "Unfortunately, nothing will preserve it but downright force. Whenever you give up that force, you are inevitably ruined." But we are being cautioned by the founders. We are to protect our liberty. Don't just assume it's okay. Proactively protect that liberty. To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. This is a self-evident truth. Government's just power comes from the consent of the governed. So let's just think about that for a second. If government is doing something without the consent of the governed, how would you describe that? Unjust? Self-evident truth number four. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, what ends? Securing our liberty. Whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, It is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. Now, let me be perfectly clear. I am not saying let's go abolish government. I'm reading the founding document. And the founding document says when government becomes destructive to our liberty, it's the right of the people to alter or abolish it. I'm not calling for abolishing, but I am calling for restoration of original intent. And to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. This is another self-evident truth. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. They just said, when government becomes destructive, it's the right of the people to alter or abolish it. But he's saying, don't do this on a whim. You don't do it just because you get mad. You don't do it because there's a policy you don't like. You don't go out and alter a 250-year government just because political appointees perjure themselves in front of the Senate or spend time on an island in the Caribbean. That's not sufficient grounds for abolishing a government. And accordingly, all experience has shown mankind is more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they're accustomed. They're saying, look at mankind's history. We don't throw off our government every 6 weeks when we get mad at something an official does. All experience has shown people are slow to do this. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism. I want to take a time out here and explain a couple of words, because there's a couple of words there that we don't use in common language today. Abuses. Last Saturday, I was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and I had the opportunity to interview Lauren Rodriguez. Last year, Lauren Rodriguez and her husband, Keone, they were laying in bed when an armored personnel carrier drove up and parked in their front lawn. Between 40 and 50 heavily armed FBI agents poured up, entered their house. She described being handcuffed before dawn, pulled out of her house, having 6 to 8 red dots on her chest from rifles because they wanted to arrest her husband. Anyone want to guess what her husband was accused of? Writing software. Zero criminal record, zero history of violence, but you can't be too safe. They had drones in the air, an armored personnel carrier on the front lawn, and between 40 and 50, they didn't stand still long enough to count them, 40 to 50 heavily armed agents with automatic weapons because that guy wrote some software. Is that an abuse? In my book, I would call that an abuse. I think he could have probably been taken into custody with no more than 30 agents. Next slide, please. Usurpation, a word we don't commonly use today, but usurpation means going beyond what you're allowed to do, exercising authority you don't legitimately have. And what the founding fathers are saying is, when there has been a long train of usurpations, governing against the consent of the governed, that's when we're getting into dangerous territory. Because when this happens, and I'm not saying it's happened yet, but when these conditions are met, when there has been a long train of abuses and usurpations, you know what the Founding Fathers' solution is? Well, we'll get back to that in a second. Talking about usurpations and talking about abuses. I'm going to describe a country, and I want you to just imagine this for a moment. Imagine a country where every time a person flies, the government wants to keep record of it. And everywhere a person drives, the government wants to keep record of it. And everything that a person purchases with a credit card, is the government tracking your credit card purchases? Yes, they are. So everywhere you fly, everywhere you drive, everything you purchase, there's a new technology called Signal Trace. What Signal Trace does, more than what flock cameras do, Signal Trace tracks these. And if you have a glucose monitor, if you have a pacemaker, if you have a hearing aid, it tracks those. If you have a dog that has a chip in it, you have a cell phone, you have a smartwatch, you have a Fitbit, Signal Trace is tracking all of those. And here's what it does. When I drive by a Signal Trace device, and this is just a white square panel, when I drive by that, it takes inventory of everything in my car, and it notes my license plate, and it creates an entry. All of these electronic devices, and it doesn't just say AirPods. There is a specific, think of it like a serial number to every AirPod. But it records that. And every time I drive by, it sees my license plate, it sees what devices I have, it makes record of it, keeping track of me with my electronic devices. So in the future, if I were to go to some protest and somebody else drove me there, hey, we saw John's watch, we saw John's headphones, we saw John's glucose monitor, we know John's there. Or I give a friend a ride to work. Now all of his devices are associated with my license plate. We know these two people know each other because they were in a car together. So imagine a country where the government tracks where you fly, where you drive, what you spend money on with credit cards. They track the electronic devices in your pocket. They track everything that you post on social media. And they have a database of over 30 billion photos, so they can put facial recognition cameras in public spaces and know who's walking down the street. Now, if I were describing this country, what country do you think I'm talking about? A couple of years ago, everyone would say China. They certainly wouldn't say the land of the free and the home of the brave, one nation under surveillance. So now getting back to the idea about what was the Founding Fathers' solution to this. As we wrap up looking at these self-evident truths, when a long train of abuses and usurpations happen, it is the right, it is the duty to throw off such government and provide new guards for the future security. Again, I'm not saying it's time to throw off the government. But I am saying we are past time to start restoring the government to the original intent of the founders. These blue dots represent flock cameras in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And there are 114 cameras in that field of view. Nationwide, as of this morning, DFLOC knows the location of 108,000 license plate readers across the United States. And here's my question. How much consent did the people give before this happened? 108,000 cameras from sea to shining sea tracking everywhere that you drive. Now, if these cameras were only being used with a hot list, meaning my car was stolen, so I called the police, report my car is stolen, here's the license plate number, and these cameras were looking for stolen cars. Or if there was an Amber Alert and a witness saw a child being put into a particular car, most people wouldn't have much issue with this if that's all they did, but that's not what they do. What these cameras do, they record everybody's license plate, and what they call vehicle fingerprint. This isn't my term, this is their term. Vehicle fingerprint, make, model, color of the car, distinguishing characteristics like a roof rack or bicycle rack, a scratch or a dent, and bumper stickers. So whether a person has a pro-Israel or a pro-Palestinian bumper sticker, a pro-life or a pro-choice bumper sticker, your bumper stickers are being cataloged. Now, Flock likes to say that data is only held for 30 days and then deleted. I'm not convinced. And here's why I'm not convinced. If you go on the terms of service on Flock's own website, it says this data belongs to the customer. Nashville PD, the county sheriff, the data belongs to the customer. And after 30 days, the customer's data is deleted, unless the customer pays extra for us to store it longer. And there's also a provision in the terms and conditions that say, as the company, as Flock, we maintain a worldwide, irrevocable, royalty-free, perpetual license to that data. Okay, perpetual means more than 30 days. I think perpetual means forever. We have a perpetual license to use and disclose. That's in their language. We have a perpetual license to use and disclose this data. Well, how can you do that when you delete it after 30 days? Something doesn't add up. Let's get back to the idea of consent. In the early days of Flock putting up these cameras everywhere, they just appeared. And Flock intentionally installs many of them at night. They claim they do this so that their employees don't get harassed. Okay, number one, might ask yourself, why are they being harassed? Maybe people don't like them. Maybe they're going up without the consent of the governed. But number two, as these cameras went up, there was no public debate about it. Now, I will not stand here and say these cameras are absolutely worthless. These cameras, under certain circumstances, can be beneficial, under very limited circumstances. But they also come at a significant price, not just the financial cost that the taxpayers are paying, but they're also coming at a cost to our liberty, because liberty and privacy are inseparable. So we have numerous instances where these cameras just went up and nobody knew they were coming. The money was spent, the cameras are up, that's it. And then as people started to wake up to it, because of people like Ben Jordan, Naomi Brockwell, myself, other people on YouTube that are making videos about these, people started speaking up. People started saying, we don't want these in our community. People started going to city and county council meetings saying, we don't want this. And some cities have said, okay, we want to get reelected. We're going to take these cameras down, or we're not going to renew the contract. Other cities basically said, shut up and go home. We know better than you do. Next slide, please. This is one of my favorite. This is from Toledo. Venice Williams, she is the president of the city council in Toledo. Venice Williams said she was thankful for her public comment the day before. She was thankful to the Toledo Police Department putting away criminals. Quote, I'm very supportive of Flock, Williams said. We've had it for 20 years. I'm not in the habit of calling people liars, but if you want to say that you've had Flock cameras up for 20 years, at best, you're mistaken. Flock has only existed since 2017. The company is only 9 years old, so if you got the very first one they made, the working prototype, at most, you've had it for 9 years. She claims they've been using them for 20. So anyway, what happened, the first round, these cameras went up without any input from the public. Then people started showing up and saying, we don't want these. And some cities backed down and said, okay. And other cities said, we know better than you. We're putting them up anyway. Next slide, please. 73 cities, DFLOC keeps track of this. 73 cities have either rejected them or canceled contracts or decided to not renew their contracts because the public is speaking up. So what do you think happens now? Well, Flock is persistent. This is an email from Dunwoody, Georgia. There's another man that I have interviewed on my YouTube channel named Jason Hunyar. Jason is like a fifth degree black belt of open records request. Jason has sent over 100 open records requests to the city of Dunwoody, Georgia, and this email is one of the things that he received from the city in response to an open records request. This is a meeting between the Real-Time Crime Center. A couple of the names on there are from the Real-Time Crime Center. A couple of names on the list are from Flock. And then there's a bunch of names that Jason didn't recognize. It was a person's name at targetedvictory.com, a person's name at 6amstrategies.com. Who are these people? Well, Flock has gone out and hired not one, not two, but three crisis management public relation firms. And these people were all meeting in Dunwoody, Georgia. That's how we know about them. This is from Targeted Victory. Targetedvictory.com, this is what they say on their website. We bring a unique network of public relations operatives to drive activations and manage communications in any market from a single city to all 50 states. Our teams can be ready within 48 hours, scaling up and down each month based on your campaign needs and budget. These teams consist of former journalists, communications experts, chosen based on your specific goals. Our network of over 1,000 local operatives has built campaigns for clients to raise awareness and build support for brands, products. This is PR. When organic things happen, like me or Ben Jordan or Naomi Brockwell talking about an issue, and individual citizens say, we don't want this, and individual citizens show up at a city or county council meeting to say, we don't like it, Flock's response is really twofold. The first step is, well, let's go out and hire some companies. This is 6AM Strategies. Our activations are where strategy meets execution. We build and manage hyper-local campaigns that blend community outreach, grassroots advocacy, media engagement to deliver measurable impact. And this is a third one. We start by identifying goals and pinpointing priorities. This is the way Jason Hunyar on his Substack summarizes it. I want to be clear about what this group is. The Targeted Victories website says communication is personal and trust is local. 6AM's website says real impact starts with stories that come from the community. Together, under the same Stagwell Global parent company, they are describing a single operation: manufacture local trust, generate community level cover, and deploy it on behalf of a corporate client. Their documented track record, the one the Washington Post reported on in 2022, is doing that through planted op-eds, recruited voices, and seeded stories. That's not speculation, that's their own words. So Flock is out buying public support, getting people to show up at city council meetings to tell you how much they love Flock cameras. But that's only part of Flock's response. The other part of their response is, if the cities don't want it, forget the cities. We're going to go straight to law enforcement. Law enforcement typically has limited budgets, some discretionary funds. A police chief may have budget authority up to $25,000 or $50,000, but if he wants to spend $800,000, he needs city council approval. Flock has a workaround. Hey, Department of Homeland Security has some grants. We can bypass all that messy public input stuff, because if the city council wants to spend $600,000, they have to have meetings, and there are laws that say meetings must be advertised and the community is allowed to attend. But DHS over here, they've got a big pool of federal dollars, and we will fill out some forms for you, and you can get federal dollars, and you don't even have to tell the mayor. We'll just get money for you, and you can just put them up. That way we can bypass all the public input. Remember what the founding fathers said? To secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. But if people don't consent, go to the federal government, they'll give you money, and you don't need the consent of the local people. Why does any of this matter in the first place? What's the harm from Flock or any other company tracking everywhere you drive? Well, I'm going to spend the rest of this presentation, and then I'm going to take Q&A. But I'm going to answer that question in the last part of this presentation. Why does it even matter? I made a video a couple of months ago that I called Enemy of the State. An Enemy of the State was a whole video about one piece of legislation introduced by this gentleman. This is State Representative Danny Alvarez from Florida. Danny Alvarez this year introduced a bill in the Florida legislature. The bill was House Bill 945. You can go look it up online. I'm going to show you a couple of excerpts from it. But House Bill 945 from the 2026 Florida General Assembly, that bill it did a couple of things. It created a Florida-level counterterrorism unit, and it defined a term I had never heard before. Now, I know what a terrorist is. That term's been around for a long time. A person who uses violence or the threat of violence to accomplish a political end. That is the definition of a terrorist. This bill used the term adversary intelligence entity. And when I first heard that term, I thought, are you talking about Chaos from Get Smart? Or are you talking about Boris and Natasha from Rocky and Bullwinkle? What is an adversary intelligence entity? And the bill answers that question. Next slide. This starts with an adversary intelligence entity is a government, non-governmental organization, corporation, business, group, cell, or individual whose demonstrated actions, views, or opinions are a threat or are inimical to the interest of the state. Inimical just means harmful. So if a person holds views or opinions that are a threat to or harmful to the interest of the state, that person by law would be an adversary intelligence entity. Okay, time out. I have questions. Can somebody please tell me what are the interests of the state? Because if my views are detrimental to the interests of the state, I'm in trouble. So what are the interests? I want to get my mind right. What are the interests of the state? I could have sworn 2 or 3 years ago, the interest of the state included reducing our CO2 emissions because global warming was an existential threat to mankind. We're all going to die by 2030. In fact, I have a recording of a member of Congress saying it doesn't matter because by 2030, the world is going to end. Her words, not mine. The world is going to end in 2030 if we don't get CO2 under control. So is it the interest of the state to limit CO2 emissions? That seemed to be the case until a year ago, 2 years ago, about the time that we needed another 20 gigawatts for data centers. And all of a sudden, when we needed data centers, everything we told you about 20 years ago, or for the past 20 years, we're all going to die in 2030 because of global warming, missed it by that much. It's really not an issue. We need power. We need about another 20 to 30 gigawatts of power because we want more AI data centers. And if you questioned me back then, you're a science denier. And if you question me today, you're a science denier. I didn't change, reality changed. CO2 emissions used to be an existential threat to humanity, and today, no. Where'd you ever get that idea? So anyway, coming back to this idea, a person whose views or opinions are deemed a threat to the interest of the state, does the governor get to decide the interest of the state? Is it the legislature, the courts, the counties? The bill doesn't address who gets to decide the interest of the states. But the second question that everyone in this room should be asking, How would they even know my views or opinions? Well, we're getting to that. This is directly from the bill. The Domestic Security Task Force established under Section S, the unit shall identify threats by analyzing pattern of life data. I want everyone in this room to get very familiar with the term pattern of life data. Remember earlier when I said government surveillance and surveillance capitalism kind of did this? Pattern life data is collected about every last one of us in more ways than you can imagine. And most people start with, well, my phone is up here recording me right now. Most people think, okay, that just means my cell phone. Oh yes, that and a whole bunch of other things. Pattern of life data, this includes where you go, what you watch or read, what you buy, what you post online, who you call or text, who you meet in person, your hobbies and interests, your values and beliefs. All of that is considered pattern of life data, and all of that is for sale today on every last one of us. I made another video, that's what I do, but based on the game that we played back in the 70s before anyone had smartphones and tablets, there was a game called Travel Bingo. You look for a cow, you look for a convertible, you look for a phone booth. I decided there's so many forms of surveillance, I was going to make a surveillance bingo. And kind of a metaphor, but it really was intended to help people realize just how much surveillance is out there. So on my surveillance bingo card, Flock has a competitor. Their competitor is called Leonardo. And Leonardo makes license plate readers, but nobody ever sees them because they are designed to be hidden. Many times they're going to be mounted on police cars. That's one of the most common things. But you may also drive past one inside of an orange and white traffic cone. There will be a little cutout, and as you pass it, it gets your license plates. Or an unmarked police car could have it in the roof rack, or an unmarked police truck could have it in a toolbox. These cameras are designed to be hidden. Leonardo is the one that came up with SignalTrace, and SignalTrace is the one that catches all of your electronic devices, associates them with your license plate so that it can know these devices belong to this license plate. Then it's a really short putt to figure out who does that license plate belong to. But this allows them to start combining people. How it works? Well, you drive by and it gets your phone, your watch, your computer, your tablet, your Fitbit, every electronic device on you or built into your car. It's all going to be captured. The little Bluetooth sensors inside of your tire that measure your tire pressure, all of it. That information is collected, stored in a database, so that if you are ever being looked for, they can find you as soon as one of your devices goes by something. Or they know who you're with because in my car they see my devices, but they see somebody else's devices. Well, who are those devices normally associated with? This license plate number. So now we know John knows this person. Ring doorbells, dash cams, Flock cameras. This was a headline from last October. Amazon Ring security cameras moving deeper into law enforcement with Flock Safety and Axon deals. Ring announced last October, we're going to give access to Flock from all of the video doorbells. If you remember it was during the Super Bowl this year, Ring Doorbell ran a disastrous commercial. They are absolutely tone deaf. They were bragging about this many pets go missing every year, but we have this new feature built into Amazon Ring doorbells. If your daughter's St. Bernard gets lost, you can report it to us and we will turn on every camera in the community looking for a St. Bernard. Okay. I mean, it wouldn't work to just put an Apple AirTag in your dog's collar and then you could find exactly where that dog is 24/7. But when Ring announced, "We can find lost dogs." It took about 2 milliseconds for people to say, if you can distinguish between a golden retriever and an Irish setter, you can probably distinguish between a 6-foot Caucasian and a 5'10" Hispanic. And people started saying, we really don't want to participate in this. So Amazon Ring, after getting tremendous blowback from the public, because not everyone wants to be surveilled, Amazon Ring announced, we were just kidding, we're canceling that partnership. Keep an eye on them. They have a tendency of flip-flopping, so I would not be a bit surprised if this doesn't happen again, but quieter. And what makes this dangerous? Flock's patent, they call themselves Flock Safety, but their U.S. patent is for a, quote, dynamic surveillance network. I guess Flock Surveillance just didn't have a ring to it. But their patent is for a dynamic surveillance network, and what they advertise is, we can ingest video from any cloud-enabled camera. I noticed there's a security camera at the back of the sanctuary here. I'm guessing that one is not connected to Flock, but the point is, you go walking into a Target, you go walking past a barber shop, if you see a camera, you don't know if it's connected to Flock, because Flock can ingest video from absolutely anywhere. This recently made the news. I mentioned Jason Hunyar earlier. In Dunwoody, Georgia, you had police officers who are basically like unpaid spokespeople for Flock. You had police officers in Dunwoody, Georgia going into private businesses, trying to get private business owners to connect all of their cameras to Flock. Now, there is a fee involved in that. Flock is making money off of this, but it's only for public safety. They went to a daycare center, and they got the daycare center to put all of their cameras on the Flock network. And this was sold as, this is for safety. God forbid, but if there was an active shooter at your daycare, law enforcement can now instantly get access to your cameras to know where the shooter is, what they're armed with, how many hostages they have, etc. This is public safety, and it's in the terms and service. No human will ever look at this video unless you call 911 and the police need to use it. So the daycare center signed up for it. Jason Hunyar, who literally lives down the street from the daycare center, he has a baby now, he's a brand new father. He did an open records request. I want the audit logs for those cameras. That, you remember the cameras that no one's going to look at? He got the audit logs and found out there are 3 men at Flock routinely logging in and looking at these cameras. Now, there are multiple cameras at the daycare center, the parking lot, the hallways. There were 2 cameras in particular that they tended to pay a lot more attention to, the children's pool and the girls' gymnastics area. I'm sure it's innocent. What Patrick Henry said about be suspicious of anyone that approaches that precious jewel, it'll be fine. When Jason brought this to the attention of the city council, terms of service say they're not going to look at this. The audit logs say they're looking at this repeatedly. City council's position was, it's fine, you worry too much. Flock, here's another $212,000, we want some more services from you. The day after Jason brought this up to the city council, they cut another check to Flock for over $200,000. Flock, when they were caught, they said, this is not what it looks like. We were just doing demos for people. Okay, your terms of service say you don't do this, but you're saying that you just do demos? And it's okay because we have an agreement with the city that lets us do this. And Jason said, great. Open records request, I want a copy of that agreement. And the city said, what agreement? Well, Flock said we have an agreement that lets us do this, and the city says there's no such agreement. We can't give you a copy because it doesn't exist. Lots of inconsistencies. Next slide, please. Drones, Fitbits, smartwatches, next slide. Oh, here's a good one. Walmart uses facial recognition. I had a subscriber to my channel email me, and he said, I intentionally left my phone at home. I went to Walmart, I paid cash, and when I got home, I had an email from Walmart asking me to leave a review on the product I just purchased. How did this happen? And I said, well, at some point in the past, you probably used self-checkout, which has a camera with facial recognition, and you either paid by credit card, or maybe you had your phone with you at that time, but they associated your face, they know who you are, that's why you got this. But facial recognition, that's old school. Next slide. This is Walmart's patent. The name of the patent is Detecting Customer Dissatisfaction Using Biometric Data. This patent has already been issued. Next slide. It describes how to use a video system to not only do facial recognition, but to do emotional recognition. And they have the patent. This way they can, we all know how good Walmart is about customer satisfaction. If a customer looks like they're getting upset, this way they can send somebody out to respond to them. Well, that's the claim anyway. Next slide. Televisions. How many of you know how much your smart TV is spying on you? Got one. Next slide. Attorney General Ken Paxton in Texas. He sued the five biggest TV makers because smart TVs today, LG, Samsung, Sony, Vizio, your five biggest TV makers, every 500 milliseconds, that is every half a second, it takes a screenshot of whatever is displayed on your television. And then it goes through what's called automatic content recognition, ACR. And that way it can simplify, instead of having to send an entire screenshot, it recognizes what are you watching. If you are watching some Netflix series, season 3, episode 2, and you're 12 minutes in, it knows you're 12 minutes into that episode. And that's the information that's sent back to the mothership. They track everything you're watching every half a second. Now that may not seem like a big deal to some people because, you know, Netflix knows what you're watching too, if you're watching Netflix. If you're playing a video game, PS3, Xbox, if it's on the screen, it's being screenshot and recorded, sent back to the mothership. If you are using your TV as a computer and you're browsing, well, now they're getting your browsing. If you are connecting your laptop to the TV to watch something off your laptop, congratulations. Your home movies are now being shared with Sony or LG or whoever else. All this information is being collected, it's being cataloged, and it's feeding the pattern of life data. You're interested in nature documentaries, this person's interested in environmental causes, this person's watching religious programming, it's going into your dossier. Next slide. Smart meters. I'm old enough to remember the old days when once a month somebody from the utility company would come around and read your meter, and they would take your reading, subtract last month's reading, here's how much you've used in the last 30 days, here's your bill. Smart meters are broadcasting 24/7, second by second, how much electricity are you using right now? And it goes beyond how much electricity are you using, because a water heater, a TV, and a microwave have different signatures to them. They can tell what's turned on. So let's just do a little thought experiment. Assume you have an electric water heater and you're a family of three. And Tuesday, your water usage increases by 33%. And it stays that way for 4 days and then it drops back to normal. What's the most likely explanation of why your hot water usage went up 33% for 3 days? Somebody's staying with you that isn't normally there. Now, let's just start thinking what AI can do with pattern of life data. My electric or my hot water usage dropped by, in our case, there's three of us that live at my house. So if I'm traveling, our water usage drops by 33%. And if I go somewhere and I stay with someone and they're a family of three, well, their water usage goes up 33%. And if I happen to be watching Netflix and I'm on episode 3 of season 4 and I'm watching that person's Netflix, AI can say, wait a minute, somebody at John's house is probably traveling because the water usage went down. And somebody is probably staying at Jim's house because his water usage went up. Now, we don't know who it is, but we also know somebody is watching this show on Netflix on his account. And we also know that John's in the vicinity because we've got, you know, 118 license plate reads between Indiana and Tennessee. AI can very quickly figure out who's where, who are they with, how long were they there. This is the dystopian world that we're moving into. I've already talked about Flock cameras. Let's talk briefly about Flock microphones. This is a product called Flock Raven. And what Flock Raven is, it is a very sensitive, cloud-enabled, AI-powered microphone. And these are going up in places that you would expect to have a little bit of privacy. We're talking hiking trails. Out in a woods, these things are popping up. And it's there for public safety. Next slide, please. An expanding sound library. When these were first installed, they were Flock's version of an older technology called ShotSpotter. ShotSpotter's been around for probably close to 20 years. ShotSpotter is a microphone that is tuned to listen to gunshots. And if you have two ShotSpotters, if a gunshot is detected, you can measure the time difference between when does the sound hit here and when does the sound hit here, and you can figure out pretty closely where that shot must have been fired from. Well, that's what these were sold as, but then Flock pushed a software update to these devices. Now they listen for, quote, sounds of aggression. Can anyone tell me what a sound of aggression is? I can imagine, but I don't know. But it says an expanding sound library, meaning the AI is getting smarter and it can detect things. So is it reasonable to think that if today it can detect someone yelling help, maybe it could detect a threat. Maybe it could detect two people arguing. Well, what's it going to do? Well, it can summon police. It knows where and when somebody raised their voice, so it could summon authorities. Do you think it's possible in the future somebody could send a software update to listen for unpopular political positions? I was interviewed a couple of weeks ago, ABC News in Fort Wayne, Indiana. They were looking for somebody to give a counter argument to law enforcement because Fort Wayne police are putting these up all over Fort Wayne. And they played, after I did the interview, I saw the news package that played. They played a very short clip of me expressing my concerns. And then they played a police officer. And here's his quote. These are designed to not listen to conversations. Okay, my background is electrical engineering. I would truly love to talk to that officer and just ask him, if you wanted to listen to conversations, how would you design this different? Would you put a microphone in it? Oh, it has one. Would you connect it to the cloud? It is connected to the cloud. Would you put AI in it? This has AI. Well, tell me what you would do different from a hardware standpoint, if you wanted to listen to conversations. You'd build one of those, it's capable. Once the hardware is in place, now it's a matter of policy, because you can listen to conversations. And you can swear all day long on a stack of Bibles a foot tall, I promise I will not do this until I do.